Because ultimately, sitting here, at first, it's a very simple process. You know, we simply stop. You know, and because the body stops, of course, it doesn't mean everything else stops. But if we sit there and wait, and this is really all about kind of the patience of kind of waiting for things to settle. And as they settle, then we seem to begin to recognize, you know, they talk about this practice as insight, and insight is our ability. You know, sometimes we have these concepts. And once in a while, when we sit long enough and quiet enough, that we touch something deep about them that gives us an insight. And that's really what we're doing, our practice. We have to kind of stop and shut up and sit down and struggle a bit. And then in that struggle, there's a sense of possibility of kind of touching into something deeper, into kind of the, in a sense, it's about more about the universal knowing. So last night, Gil kind of brought up the kind of theme here of the kind of the second of the Eightfold Noble Path, which I like to translate as kind of a wise intention or wise thought. I get a little right, doesn't fit me right, but wise seems purposefully helpful, you know. And really the fundamentals here is, it's kind of tricky to talk about. I realized I was thinking about it earlier and went, oh my, this is a talk about countercultural, a word called renunciation, you know, that one, it doesn't fit too well in our kind of the Western or Eastern paradigm these days, you know. And yet it is the fundamentals, kind of the heart of how we find a way to untangle and awaken. I remember when my daughter was, she was about 13, and we had this big discussion. She wanted to go out, and I didn't think she should. You know how it goes. And so we had this little battle going on, and she said, well, what, I just want to be free, you know? And I want freedom to do what I want, you know. And so we had a little discussion of freedom of doing what you want, when I said that it was probably not wise, you know, this particular arena or point. And then I tried to explain. I don't know if she got it, but really the fundamentals is actually freedom is to be free from, you know. Free from, sometimes I think, the tyranny of our imaginations and our wants and our desires, and how do we free ourselves from those things? Because they are the things that, in essence, kind of hold us in captivity. Unfortunately, she didn't fully understand it, but, you know, do any of us, you know? It's interesting because this particular path, the fundamentals are based on that. It's really about the fact that it's freedom from, you know. And this word renunciation, you know, in its essence is when you look at the monastic system and with monks and nuns, they truly, it's a parameter is set up. And you could say, oh, you know, it's about suffering by not having these things. Or you can say, it's actually freedom from. And I think that's really more what it's about, is one of the things, you know, I just spent 3 months in Asia, and I like to travel kind of, I'm still a bootstrap backpacker type because I choose to be. And there's something about being in a room, simple room, I like bathroom, with a suitcase, and that's all. You know, here I have so much stuff. I bet you do too, you know. And it's such a comfort to actually go away and have a suitcase with I always take too much stuff also, even in that, you know. But there's something about the simplicity of that. And I think a lot of, so it's not actually a negative, it's just a means to sometimes release some of the complexity of our possessions, our thoughts, the people around us. That's why I like to travel, you know. It kind of breaks a lot of that down. And which is one, we could say it's one means of doing it. But from the fundamentals here, it's really about, you know, in a sense, choosing in the midst of a complex world, you know, to begin to recognize that the simple, to be able to say, oh, to live simply is a lot about freedom. You know. It's interesting that the fundamentals, I always think of these practices, what is the fundamentals of them, are traditionally really the three characteristics of, first of all, that, you know, all things are impermanent. And so there's an insight into that that gives us the power to simplify, to let go, you know, to build more up. That isn't necessarily about freedom, you know. And so that simple truth of, you know, Anicca, that all things are impermanent, and that we begin to, once we really, that kind of, I'd say, the wisdom eye begins to see that, then we simplify, you know, and try to see where is it that we, with our, particularly with our stories, of how we make our worlds more complex than they should be, you know. Because we know all the things that are, they have but one nature. They arise, they're there for a while, and they pass away. And recognizing this and realizing this really gives us reason to simplify, or you could say renounce many of the complexities that the Western and Eastern paradigm brings to, boy, is it complex with the, I don't know, I got an iPad, an iPhone, a computer. It's like, oh my goodness. And then all the material that comes with that and the options and, and I think on one level, I think it's it can be used properly. And on another level, what is it? It's ADHD, the kind of the ultimate anything, any direction, except for being here, you know. So simply understanding that, in the same way that we can understand that, you know, there is the truth, the first noble truth of suffering, you know. And that suffering, there's body, there's emotion, there's a complexity of mind, of, you know, chewing something over and trying to figure it out over and over again. It's all a type of suffering, you know. And so kind of the renunciation, it goes back to the wisdom of our ability to, first of all, recognize the causes and conditions of it, you know. And we can't always fix it. But we can also recognize many times the deeper roots of why it happens, you know. So we can actually, in some ways, kind of, we have the ability to release it on a certain level. And kind of the third one, I always think of it as this is a complex one, is the renunciation of who you think you are. Or I like to say, the tyranny of the self. You know, and how we go around, comparing and setting up comparisons as a means of securing ourselves through comparison. And wow, how much suffering comes with that. I liked in Sri Lanka this year, this last month, you know, I was there for what they call Sangha Dana Day, and it means that a lot of the, probably this was at the Bodhi Tree, which is an interesting story, you know, that it's a 2,300-year-old tree that's, it's interesting because it actually flowers from within, which I thought was always such apropos because it's by leaf and by cutting that it actually propagates itself. And so they say it actually flowers from within, which is a great terminology for what we're doing, you know. But it was interesting that the story goes that trees there in Sri Lanka is 2,300 years old, and the great warrior emperor Ashoka had a son, and he sent his son and four monks down, which really began the history in Ceylon, now Sri Lanka, of Buddhism there, of Theravadan Buddhism. And with that, sometime right after that, he sent his daughter, who was a nun, the first nun to go down there. And she brought a cutting from the Bodhi tree in Bodh Gaya, and that was planted there. And is still there. And many, many years later, because in India, Buddhism after the 11th century, when there was the Muslim invasion, and it essentially disappeared, you know. But then they were able to take a cutting from this tree and bring it back to Bodh Gaya. So it's still the same genetic tree that the Buddha sat under and became enlightened, you know. And it's always, of course, interesting that he was born under a tree, enlightened under a tree, he taught under a tree, and died under two sal trees, which says a lot about these practices as something about nature, you know, that we sit here and we can study many of our culture, you know, in the sense of finding solace is to go out in nature and let nature bring the Dharma to you. But at the same time, from these practices, it's actually a practice of turning inward and studying our nature, you know, and seeing where we get caught and in a sense of things that we have to see that are not healthy and that we have to, in some ways, renounce sometimes the, you know, of the power, the purity of non-harming, you know, non-killing or not taking what is not given or, you know, the incredible power of sexuality and how, you know, I always joke and say, you know, all these country western songs that come out of the confusion of it, you know, out of the world of desire. And that the power of speech, you know, and that can we actually know where we're coming from when we speak, you know. And it has a lot to do specifically about intention. I think a lot about the heart, that if you can kind of put your attention in your heart, then you actually have a possibility of being a benefit to yourself and to others, you know. So you need that on some level. And the same way that, you know, the world and its, you know, they say things that cause carelessness and heedlessness. And we have a grand culture that goes for its freedom sometimes through intoxicants, and majority of the time just confuses things, you know. So these are renunciations. They're simple things we say, okay, I know how to hold myself in a way that doesn't harm myself or other. You know, we also have what is known as the five hindrances, which also you can again apply, because so much of this renunciation is really being able to have the wisdom to name what causes suffering, you know. And those five hindrances, the hindrance of desire and how you know, it a lot of times leads us away from happiness, you know. It simply, supposedly through some sensual delight, will actually pull it off. But we're pulling it off in an impermanent reality. Therefore, it only has the nature to be there for a moment and disappear. And we do this over and over again. But these practices are basically eventually seeing into the maybe some of the futility of that, and that's where the renunciation comes in. We go, okay, I think I've seen this. You know, I think I can, in a sense, release that or let that down. And that in letting that down, you know, there's an incredible relief that can happen. And the same thing with, you know, if there's desire and the wanting in the mind, there's also reaction, you know, criticism and then judgment and aversive reactions. And probably don't have that, but you know what I'm talking about, you know? And it also, if we recognize it, and I think in recognizing it, to me, so much of the hindrances, it's actually, they are feelings. You know, you feel desire. It kind of pushes you out of just being here, being present, you know. And you think, oh, well, that's really going to do it for me, so I'm going to kind of maybe lean out and see if I can't have it or touch it or be of it in some way, you know. And it's kind of saying that, on one level, that just sitting here, the here and now is not enough, you know. You know, But then along comes this judgment or criticism or contraction, and we have aversive reaction, you know. And sometimes I hear this, you know, that sometimes people react very quickly to that. And I think what we're doing here, in a sense, is we're trying to slow our system down enough to see some of the primal movement itself, you know, which then may give us a little bit of space before we speak or before we act, which has to do with that judgment or that criticism or that aversion on some level, you know. And you actually then, by releasing that, again, there's a piece of freedom there. Oh, I'm not caught by that. No. And then kind of down the list we have, of course, the words which are kind of apropos sometimes for the first day, and the word sloth, you know, and torpor. And I really don't have much judgment about it for the first day, because again, I think in our culture it's just like the mechanics of the phones and computers and the driving and the and not sleeping enough, all that's really taxing. So in a way, I think sometimes coming here, it's okay to just you know, in the relaxation that you are not going to be all here, you know. But I also know that and I know, you know, for years I used to come, and I would come to retreat, and sometimes the first couple of days I don't know if I actually ever found a breath, you know. I just would kind of space out, and I would try, but as soon as I tried, and with my eyes closed and sitting quietly, you know, and sometimes I think my nose had almost hit the mat, you know. But it's also my nervous system, and it needed to settle down to fully be here. You know? So it's not that it's a bad thing, but I think for me it was renouncing it, renunciation of it being some other way, like the way I wanted it instead of the way it was. And then the next one, restlessness and worry, I think. That too comes. No. And restlessness, sometimes you know, it's not that you're trying to get rid of it. You're just trying to cope with it, kind of get through it, because it's very uncomfortable. It's something that kind of holds us in a little bit in captivity. But it too has the nature to be there for a while and pass away if you'll just kind of hang in there with it. And I think worry is something you maybe can't do so much about the restlessness, but sit there. But when worry comes up, which is really, what is worry? It's usually a string of words in the mind that is about the future, you know. And so in a way, these practices have just you know, releasing or letting go or renouncing, being able to fix or solve something in the future is actually a power we have. We can say, no, I'm not doing that, you know. I'm just going to sit here and feel my body and feel my breath, and that's good enough. I was trying to think of something, renouncing doubt. That's a, you know, it's maybe why I go to Asia. I don't think I have a lot of faith, but when I go and, you know, I go to some of the wats or the temples, and I am so touched by the devotion that people have towards the Buddha way, you know, and it kind of fills me, and I realize that I borrow from them a kind of trust that then gives me permission to follow this path a little closer, you know. It's not an easy one for what a Western part of our paradigm is, especially coming to Buddhism if you're not from Buddhist kind of country or family system, is we're doubters, you know. So we've had to kind of speculate and read and try to figure out what this is all about. You know, so just that's just part of the story of doing this, you know. So I think this, you know, the one thing I know first day is hard, and you know, I was going to say give yourself some slack. So I'll read my little poem here to end, and then we'll keep going. A new life. A majestic Buddha sitting in the center of our hall, resting so silent in the midst of our world, while we, on the other hand, squirm, fidget, imagine. Everything still but me. Chasing our smallest thoughts, quelling our desire over and over again, living in a world just missed. Living in a world just missed. Another mind wave drawing us out again and again. Somewhere in the cloud, all our lives are stored, images, plans, memories, dreams, thoughts, emotions, pulling us out towards what end? How to wake up in the midst of all this, making friends with all these complex monologues? Could it be as simple as bowing to each new arrival? Could it be as simple as bowing to each new arrival, befriending even the difficult and frightened parts? Firmly establishing ourselves, once again, finding no place better, finding no place better than this flimsy breath, a grounded body, and this wayward mind. With everything settled, the heart, like a shy puppy, begins to crawl out of its hiding place, excited to be in the wonder of a new life. Let's just sit for a moment. May you find peace and ease in your body, in your mind, and in your heart.